Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
You're locked in with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
We go straight out to the HRP guest line, being joined by the Vice President for Intercollegiate Athletics at the University of Houston, Eddie Nunez. Eddie, thanks for taking a few minutes hanging out with the Killer Bees this afternoon. Game day trucks I saw are on campus. What's the buzz like with game day coming into town tomorrow?
It's exciting. It's an exciting time here on our campus. To have those guys pull up is a true testament to our basketball program and what Coach Sampson and his staff have built here. So it's an exciting time, man. There's a lot of buzz.
Eddie, how exciting is it, as you mentioned, about coming into this entire situation when you've got a new conference and you've got new facilities and more facilities being built? And now it seems like you've got two really premier coaches at the top of your coaching lineup, because Kelvin's continually done that. And then with Coach Fritz, you got two guys now that seem like they are on the cusp of exactly where college athletics is now and exactly how to get the right players into your programs.
Yeah, that's what, everybody asks why I was so attracted to this job. When you look at, all the things that were already existing here, the hard work that was done to get to the Big 12. But when you add a coach like Willie Fritz, who the culture, the hard work, the knowledge, the experience, everything that he brings to the table, and he's already showing it with the recruiting class that he's been able to do, and even last year's team winning the games that we've won, it was a challenging time. He didn't have an NIL budget footprint that many others had. So he's been able to do a lot. And now when you have him and Kelvin Sampson, both of those working together to helping elevate, the rising tide lifts all ships, and that's exactly what it is. And you got those two guys really helping. I'm excited because it makes this job not just a great place to be, but one that we know that we can compete at the highest level. This is lining up to be really special.
Eddie Nunez joining us on the HRNP guest line. Kelvin Sampson was on with the morning guys, John and Lance, today. He talked about how game day is a great infomercial for the university. 2 hours, national television. It goes right into the big game between Houston and Iowa State later that afternoon. If you had to give that infomercial pitch to everybody that might not be familiar with the University of Houston, what would that pitch be?
It's as simple as this. Come experience culture. Come experience excitement. Come experience a brand of basketball that not just represents this unbelievable university, but this city. He has done it the right way. He has done it with on the back of this city, for the city. I know that's the motto, but everything they do and we do here is to make sure that we lift up everything around us, and that program has done it. And so I urge all the fans out there to come out, really experience game day. I was a part of game day on the football side probably about a handful of times when I was at LSU. The impact that it has on the community, the university, but the program, just the program itself, is really incredible. So we need everybody out there. We need them to come out, show their support, cheer loudly, because this is a special day for this program.
Eddie, you mentioned the fact that you've been other places before you got here, and we talk all the time because we literally have to on a daily basis, but especially during recruiting periods. The combination of the transfer portal and NIL have just created this whole new, brave new world and landscape that is so much more challenging for so many individuals. How challenging is it for you to say, I've come from these places where we were able to do this, and now suddenly it's totally different?
Yeah, it's college athletics has been an interesting one because it's always evolved and it's changed a little here and there. But now it's changing at a much rapid pace, a much faster pace, and everybody has to be more agile and be able to pivot and look at things and say, okay, we've got to do things differently. So it's an exciting time. It really is. But it's also a time of unknown because when you see every state still throwing out NIL bills, until something's done federally, we're all going to be still working off different parameters in different places. And so that's the uncertainty that really causes many athletic directors and presidents and everything, coaches, a just difficult time going to sleep. But I'll tell you this, I'm excited because it's a change, but it's a great change. It's going to be something new, innovative. You know, when people look at the sports, you know, when you think of LIV Golf and some of these other pro models, there's a chance to have a special new kind of identity when it comes to college athletics. And so we have a chance to help it, but we got to do it right.
Andy, I feel like the coaches and the administrators that have the most success with the changing times of college athletics are the ones that embrace the change and adapt on the fly. Because like you mentioned, it's changing on the fly, whether it's NIL, yeah, whether it's these antitrust cases where players are going to get revenue sharing as soon as next season. What's the value and the importance of being able to adapt on the fly and just kind of go with the flow with the changing tides of college sports?
Yeah, you've got to be. You have to be, and it doesn't matter how old you are. Look at Coach Sampson. I mean, many say he's an old school coach, but the reality is, he is a coach. He is a championship caliber coach, but what makes him so different than many others is he understands how to continue to be innovative, how to be creative, how to understand that change is coming, regardless if you want it or not. It's coming, so you better be ready. You better put yourself on the right side of that. And I think that's what I'm trying to express to all our coaches, not just is, look, I don't have all the answers, but we're going to be on the right side of this, and we're going to do it right. We're going to rest here at the highest amount. We're going to do it. Is it going to be easy? Absolutely not. Nobody said these jobs are easy. What they said is you got to work hard and you got to make it happen. And I think that's what we have to have in this. And any one of us that work in this business have to be agile, but also we have to be willing to change a little bit. It's okay. Change is good. if you prepare yourself properly, change is good.
And as it relates to the basketball program, I mean, you've got a guy that's willing to dig in into the foxhole and go out there and help you on a daily basis to try and bring people in to support what he basically in a lot of places wouldn't have to do simply because the Blue Bloods just have it rolling in hand over fist. But he's not afraid to do those things. But the greatest thing about Kelvin, in my opinion, is he hasn't changed who he is as a coach. Like, he comes in and tells you, it's a hard sell. I'm going to be tough on you. But then you see in recent days, and he's talking about players, ex-players, current players, of what he's done for them. I mean, for you, that's got to be a joy because now you've got a calling card to get into anybody's living room to get a kid to come to U of H because of the fact that he set up such a great program.
The kids know. I was fortunate to be around Nick Saban when he was at LSU, and everybody talked about how hard he was and he was tough and this and that. And the reality is, kids know they're gonna Coach Sampson is very similar to Coach Saban. They're gonna expect a lot. But if you come to work and you understand it from the beginning what it takes, and you're not willing to just be content with being average or mediocre, you're going to have success, and there's not going to be anybody that's going to be more supportive of those young men or women, or especially those men on both football and basketball, than someone like Coach Sampson or Coach Saban. He is going to be there for them through thick and thin, and that's what they know. They know that, look, it's not going to be easy. He's going to push me. He's going to, you know, there's going to be times that he's going to scream, but he does it from an educational side, and he's always teaching. He's always helping. And so when you see these kids move on and have success, even if it's not in basketball, it's in life, part of that is because they understood that you got to bring it every day, and you got to understand that it's not going to be easy, and you're going to go through adversity. And that's what he teaches these young men.
Andy Nunez joining us, the Vice President for Intercollegiate Athletics at the University of Houston on the HR&P guest line. Now, Andy, you played some hoops back in your day. Finished up at Florida for Billy Donovan, College Game Day coming into town tomorrow. They have this segment where if a student makes a half-court shot, they win tons of money. I don't remember exactly what it is. We give you as many half-court shots to make one. How many is it taking?
I, at this point right now, I'd say give me about... I'm going to say 10, just okay, to be safe. I'm going to say 10. I think I could probably get lucky and make it in way less than that. But I play on a very limited basis now that is just really just shooting. I've told people my game was gone a long time ago. I like my body parts the way they are today. I don't need to have a surgery or something to change it up. So I'm good. I can shoot, and that's about as good as I'm going to do.
All right, 10's not bad.
We need to kind of set that up.
Blinkers has a men's game on Saturday morning.
I play
morning,
every Saturday so. Morning for a couple hours, so I think yeah. the three of us need you're, to get to half
you're
court.
You're not catching me there unless you can go from 3-point. Yeah, I was about to say, stay behind the three line, I'm good.
We have that too. Now, you got to make sure, you saw this, I'm sure, that you're not, you know, you're not going to have the law firms waiting to see if there was a toe on the line if the shot is made.
Oh, yeah.
Because, boy, it's getting sticky these days.
You know what? That's their responsibility. I hope they can manage it, but you know what? If they make if somebody makes it, they take care of the guy or the young person, whoever it is. Yeah. That's all I got to say.
Coach, what are some of your big things on your agenda as well? We always talk about football and we talk about basketball. Yeah. We know with Jeremy in the baseball program and everything you got coming up for the rest of the year. What are some of the things on your agenda to get done?
So we got a lot of things. You know, right now we're still trying to make sure that we put ourselves in the right position when it comes to NIL, comes to this whole rush year model and everything else. But the one thing that you hit the nail on the head on is we've got a bunch of sports that have just started up, softball, baseball, track, tennis. So we've got a new coach. We've got the golf program, excuse me. We've got a new coach in our women's soccer program. So there's a lot of things happening right now. So there's newness. There's getting out of the gates in many of our teams. So the excitement of everybody playing for the first time this year in some sports, and then getting ready for football, seeing spring ball right around the corner. So there's always a lot going on. Biggest thing for me, though, is I'm trying to make sure that I get in the community as much as I can. So people are seeing me probably throughout the city, throughout the state, and that's one of the things that I have to do. I need to build our brand. I need to build what we are, the vision, the culture to everybody so they can buy in and start supporting this program, because it's where it is today, I can promise you, is only the beginning. We are building this in a big, bad way, and we're going to do it great. And I want people to jump on board and be a part of this.
Great stuff. Eddie, thanks so much for taking a few minutes. We'll see you out there tomorrow. Exciting times tomorrow. And, of course, ahead with the University of Houston.
Appreciate it, gents. Y'all have a great afternoon.
You too.
Thanks again.
Eddie Nunez, Vice President for Intercollegiate Athletics. I'm biased, Blinkers, but I've been saying for years, U of H, sleeping giant. And look, Samson's proven it. Like, Samson's proven where you could take this program.
I think there's no doubt. And I think that a lot of people slept on Willie Fritz because they were, you know, a lot of people think, well, college football, you got to get this big name coach, or you got to get it to come from like a coordinator from a big name school. Everywhere Willie Fritz has been, he's won. And now he's got a chance to do it here and getting into the Big 12. And because of the resources that they have on campus, I think it's going to be so fun to watch that Willie Fritz could kind of do what Kelvin's already done. And then the calling card of the whole university is what the basketball program is and continues to do.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun tomorrow, too. I encourage you, if you're looking for something to do tomorrow, get on out there. College game day, second time for Tita Center history. Going to be great fun. And then Houston, Iowa State at 1 o'clock. All right, 713-780-ESPN. Joe Espada. This is a major season for Joe Espada. I'll tell you why next. It is the Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
Got to tell you right now about the good people at Allstate Siding and Windows. Allstate Siding and Windows is the place you need to contact if you are looking to do anything to upgrade your house, like siding, like windows, like front doors, and so much more. They're the best in the business. They've been in business for almost 50 years. It's a family-owned and operated business where they do the work for you because they come to you for absolutely no charge. They come to you and give you a free estimate. Are you thinking about siding, windows, both, maybe a front door too? They're going to come to you and explain, hey, based on the year that your house was built, based on the fact that, you know, your architecture is this way, these would be the suggestions that we would make in terms of our products and services. And there's so much more to get to, so much so that I tell you to go to AllstateSidingAndWindows.com because all the information is there, everything that you might consider, and then have someone come out for free, call them on the phone number right there at the website, get them to come to your house and have them to explain to you like they did me what would be best for your house. We moved into our house a little bit over a year ago. We got new windows from Allstate Siding and Windows. They explained everything to us, so we got the right product. They're all the great, fantastic, durable windows that are perfect for Houston's climate. They keep the air conditioning in the summer, the heat in the winter, and they're hurricane protected so that you are going to be safe and your family and your contents are going to be safe all year long. They are the best in the business. That's why I recommend you go see them. They got deals going all the time, discounts on the windows, discounts on the siding, and you can probably get a package deal. All you got to do is tell them you listen to us right here at ESPN 97.5. Lance and I are so proud to talk for the entire company, starting with Mary, her brother, and everybody else involved. Check them out today, allstatesidingandwindows.com.
ESPN 97.5. You're back with the Killer Bees on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Do you like golf? Do you like us? How about you come out and you play in the ESPN 97.5, 92.5 Occasional Invitational? Benefits Kids Meals, so it's a good cause, too. You can probably write it off. Spots are filling fast. Take the day off work. Play with us. This year's tournament takes place on Fat Tuesday, March 4th, 10:30 a.m., Wildcat Golf Club. Each golfer, you get to drink from some Carbach Brewing Company beverages. That's always fun. Lunch, dinner from Valencia's Tex-Mex Garage, very tasty, and 18 holes of golf. Register now, ESPN975.com under the promotions tab. ESPN975.com under the promotions tab. Ari Alexander, if you know, you know. Now, he just he tweeted that the Astros have they changed some numbers, right? Cooper Hummel has changed his number from 13 to number 1. Carlos Correa, the last number Correa. 1. Which, like, I'm not a huge retire numbers guy. Like, if you want to put their jersey up there and, like, honor them, cool. I don't think they should retire the jersey forever. Eventually, everybody's going to run out of numbers. But I also don't think that 4A players should be wearing the numbers of franchise icons.
Don't get me started on this, because I completely agree with what you just said. My whole thing is whether you retire the jersey or not. If this is Cam Smith at a certain point, and Cam Smith, when he gets called up to the big leagues and he's, you know, he wants to wear one, and you think that he could be the next franchise player for you, you may consider something like this.
Yeah.
But other than that, there's no way in hell, whether you have a Ring of Honor or like the Celtics and have too many numbers retired or whatever it is, you are not pulling a number like that unless you're capable of backing it up with the back of your baseball card.
Yeah.
That's brutal.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of that.
Like
in
Milwaukee, when I grew up, there, you know, 34 was Ray Allen, and now 34 is Giannis Antetokounmpo. I'm not arguing that, right? I mean, he was a lottery pick, and he's turned out to be unbelievable. But you get a guy that's fringy, and he wants to wear number 1. I think as an organization, you go, nah, we're not doing that.
It kind of stinks, too, because they made it, like, he can't wear 13 anymore because that's Christian Walker's number. But, like, give him 31. Like, give him anything
give
but
him
number
his high school
1.
Number or some other number that he wore somewhere. It's like, I've seen this a couple of times. Like, even Rodgers. Rodgers understands when he goes to the Jets, he doesn't get 12, so he takes his college number. But I'm sure these guys wore plenty of numbers back in the day that they. Or you work out a deal. I mean, you saw what Soto did for the guy that had 22 with the Mets.
Yeah.
Got him the tricked out Suburban or whatever it is. I mean, at least cash in on it.
You know what they should have done? They should have given him number 2.
I thought about that, too. I thought, well, what about if Paredes or someone wants 2?
No, give it to Cooper Hummel. Like, the 26th man on the roster, you know how the A&M does the 12th man thing? Yeah. Where they give it to, like, some walk-on slappy who might play on kickoff return, like, once, or kickoff coverage once, like, at the end of blowout games. Just treat Alex Bregman's number 2 like it's the 12th man. You give it to some slappy that just barely made the roster. Show him a little disrespect.
Yeah, I think you're feeling that the venom is in you today towards Alex Bregman, and I think that would be a very, very solid move on the franchise.
I'm done with that guy. Bregman laughing in the interview sounds like someone laughing to the bank. Boo his behind. Agree more.
But what this really is what every other major league fan base felt for years when he was with your team. Because it's kind of like the whole analogy of, you know, a guy that, like Dylan Brooks, you hated him when he was on the other team. You love him when he's on yours. So now the Red Sox nation is all giddy about the fact that they got Alex Bregman, and those little snickers and that little head bob and all the different things he did when he was in the dugout and when he was an Astro. Those were cool when he was wearing blue and orange. But now you understand what everybody else felt about why so many people hated Alex Bregman.
Yeah. Topher on the YouTube says Walker's wearing 8 now. 13's retired for a Wagner. I do remember that. Now that he mentions that, I did remember. Ari said he moved from 13 because of Christian Walker, which they did give Walker 13 at his introductory press conference. And then whenever he went to the Hall of Fame, they're like, never mind. We're going to retire that number.
Please respond to Ari and just say, actually, 13 retired Wagner. Nah. If you don't know, now you know.
No.
Oh, it's set up.
I only go after people when they go after me. I'm not a puncher.
He did go after you.
as long as it was a different thread. Like, I've moved on. I don't hold grudges.
If you don't know, now.
No, I'm friendly
Billy
with
Billy Wagner's
them.
Numbers
no,
being
I'm,
retired.
I'm friendly with people. I'm cool with confrontation, but I also forget about it 10 seconds later. Like, I only counterpunch, by the way. I'm Floyd Mayweather. I'll throw some jabs, but only if I get thrown at first.
Okay.
What?
I don't.
You disagree?
That. Yeah.
What do you mean?
Wholeheartedly.
How so?
More days than not, you come at me with I haven't heard anything at you.
But it's great content. People love it. Except for Coward D. He's not a fan. Coward D's not too pleased about it. But we've created a character out of it. So I would chalk it up as a win. Abigail's laughing. She's getting humor out of it. She's on my side. Right, Abigail, you're on my side?
I'm neutral right now.
You're Switzerland? Yeah, shocker on that one. Yeah,
but you were laughing. I did notice that. This is a big season, in my opinion, Blankers, for one Joe Espada. Look, we forget. I forgot. I was listening to Astro Line on the way home yesterday with our good friend Todd Callis and the most interesting manager in the world, Joe Espada. And Sparky's hilarious, too. Yes. So I was listening to Astro Line on the way home yesterday, which, by the way, Joe Espada, he thinks that Lance McCullers will be pitching in Sugar Land when their season opens. And he said sooner rather than later on Lance and Luis. And then he later said about Lance, late April is in play.
That's great.
To get called up to the bigs.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, that's putting a timeline on him there a little bit, which may not be the best idea, but I hope he's right. I hope that he's right. But last year he finished fourth in American League Manager of the Year voting, probably because they got off to the disastrous start. They finished strong, made the playoffs, yada, 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 yada. Now, I think in a lot of ways, last year wasn't his team. Like, he probably didn't have a whole lot of say with the roster and how the 26-man was going to look like entering the season. That was still probably more on Dana. He probably felt like he was taking over for Dusty's team. Like, he was still driving Dusty's team last season. I feel like all of that is put to rest. And you could also talk about the downsides of Joe Espada. I feel like he's pretty mediocre. I don't think that he wins tons of games from his managerial prowess. Maybe he will at some point. But going forward into this season, I think this is the year where Joe Espada takes the reins on his team. This is Joe Espada's team now. He's moving Altuve to left. The pieces are a lot different. He's talking about how he wants to fill out the 26-man roster. This is Joe Espada's team, where last year I don't know if it really felt that way at all. I felt like he was driving somebody else's bus. This is his team, and what I think of Joe Espada will be, I think, in a large way defined by how he manages in year two.
I was doing this to you because of the fact that we talked about during the year how he was even afraid to, like, cuss when he was with the umpires and everything.
See, I thought it's because I had coffee breath.
No. And I think, look, in listening to the interview like you were, the one thing that I caught, too, that kind of backs up what you're saying is the fact that when they got off to that slow start, when they were 12-24, whatever it was, and when they were really digging a hole for themselves, he made a couple mentions of the fact that the guys in the locker room had my back. They were there for me. Because it was his first year, because it was his first time managing, he probably had to lean on the veterans in that clubhouse to get the credibility that he needed with the entire clubhouse. Now, this ship is yours, Captain, and you've got to take it to the next level because a lot of those veterans that you probably leaned on are gone, like Justin Verlander and like Alex Bregman and maybe to some degree Ryan Pressly. But now, like you said, because he's implementing change, because he's talking about the pitching staff, because he's telling you who he might be leaning on or looking to as a left-handed bat or someone in the outfield we might not be thinking about, it truly is him putting his stamp on his team his way. And there's going to be a lot to judge because he can't lose sight of some of the things that where he slipped up last year that we were kind of quick to pick up on and say, hey, just like we talk about with the Texans and everybody else, when you're a first-time manager or coach and you're going to have little slip-ups, can you learn from them? Can you make sure you don't do them again? How do you do it better going forward? We're watching all those things as well as him taking the reins full-blown on his team this year.
Yeah, like to me, this is finally his team. And like one thing that actually bothers me about you putting your hand over your mouth, aside from me having the coffee breath, he was I saw a clip. I think it was with Salisbury in the morning. I could be wrong on that, but I think it was from the flagship. I saw a video on YouTube, and they were talking to him about being more proactive and arguing with umpires. He's like, oh yeah, I'm going to do that more this year. And it's kind of like, are you letting other people form your character? Are you letting other people kind of dictate what your personality is going to be like? Because last year I felt like he was a bit rigid. Like he was a bit kind of unsure. Like whenever he'd go out to the umpires and he's like, hand over mouth. Doesn't want, like he was thinking about the perception of him. And look, I don't like Aaron Boone, But I've never thought Aaron Boone in the dugout was worried about the perception of Aaron Boone. Aaron Boone lets it fly.
And he is endeared himself to his players, and his players love him because of the fact that he does let it fly in support of his guys. I think that should mean more than whatever public perception that you're trying to provide or create for yourself and the persona.
Uh-huh.
Because, I mean, I go back, I've seen some of these baseball clips on MLB Network where they say sometimes managers, just to play to the fans, would go out and get real demonstrative, throw their hat, and they're, you know, waving their arms around while they're saying, that was a great call, and I'm not really arguing this call. I'm just trying to do what I need to do to get my fans fired up for the rest of the game. Don't do that. Like, I understand the biggest part.
I think there are times you can, but generally speaking,
but for the most part, it means more if a guy gets jobbed on a call. And you want to go out there and either get tossed or make a firm, you know, line in the sand that was wrong, and you're not going to do that to my guys. Hey. That's where you need to just be yourself.
And it defends your guy. But like, for me, it goes beyond just arguing with the umpires. Like, if you're mild-mannered, okay, that's fine. Like, Dusty didn't get thrown out of a bunch of games. I'm not telling Dusty how to change arguing with umpires. But also, Dusty is not going to go seek outside opinion on how he should be talking to umpires. Or Boone, whenever he's addressing, like, lineup questions. Like, he's going to be pretty strong on his opinion. Whereas Espada seems like he can kind of be influenced. Which is like, if you're being influenced by other people, that tells me that you're not very confident with who you are.
Well, don't you also feel like the skins on the walls are different too? Like, when you're a guy like Dusty that's managed all over the place and done everything that he's done, the respect that goes with that is a given.
Oh, sure.
Whereas he did a lot, but he also got bounced in the first round in 2 and barbecue, to where there's still a lot of people, including guys in the clubhouse, that are keeping a close eye on him and kind of figuring him out as we progress forward.
He doesn't seem like he's that confident in his skin for me. And maybe that was a year one thing, and he'll improve in year two. But just like listening to the outside influence, like I saw that, like he talks about it. Like he talks about things that he's heard from the outside and how it's going to kind of change his like managerial tendencies. And it's like, I don't think I like that because it shows that you're not very confident in your own skills.
Factor this in as well, though. It could also be what he walked into. Because they got rid of a guy, or they parted ways with a guy that was Dusty Baker, that was confident in his own skin, was his way is going to be his, or the highway for the most part. And they got a guy that would be more fall in line in the ranks with, if the general manager has an opinion, if the owner and his buddies have an opinion. And it's not just how I kind of take the reins my first time ever managing as a manager, but now I've got to deal with everybody above me too, and maybe probably at a much stronger level than the guy that I'm taking over for.
Yeah. I want him to be more confident with who he is. That's why this year's a big year. Like, if I still see the same things that I was seeing last year in terms of that confidence, it's going to be like, I don't know if this is the guy for the job. If they win 84 games and they miss the playoffs, okay, that doesn't look good on you, Joe. If you limp into the wild card and you get swept by another mid team in Major League Baseball in the American League, that's not a great look for you either. So that's why I think this year's, I'm not going to go as far to say make or break, because I find it very unlikely that he gets fired after this year. But to me, it starts to define my opinion of him as a manager. I'm willing to overlook a lot of stuff in year one for all the reasons we just suggested. Year two, no, man, this is, like you said, this is your ship now.
Yep.
This is your ship. You're the captain now.
And I think a lot of the distractions have been removed because Reggie's not there anymore. You know, I think Bagwell, the combination of Bagwell and Crane, kind of learned some lessons with their missteps to where they've stepped back a little. Dana's kind of stepped forward more. So now, again, a lot of the sideshow distractions are out of the way, and even some of the veterans that might have been in the way. Now it truly is your way or the highway, but your way is going to be great. And if your players show that they still have talent, and we're still calling you out for things that either cost them here, there, a game, or whatever it is, it's going to register a different way in terms of how we grade him and how the organization and the fans look at him.
Yeah. Like, I don't rank Major League Baseball managers. I don't watch Major League Baseball games other than the Astros that closely, kind of like me of the NBA. Watch every single inning of Astro games, watch every minute of Rocket games. Outside of the league, I don't watch a ton. But if we just had to, like, TikTok does these things where blind rank, you know, things like, what's your favorite candy? 1 through 10. What's your favorite TV show? 1 through 10. If you were to blind rank Joe Espada 1 through 30 as best managers in baseball, where are you blind ranking him?
Probably the last 10.
Okay. So I was gonna say 17, which is below average.
Yeah.
Which is like, so you have him below average, bottom 10. I have him below average, slightly better, but still in that ballpark.
He's unproven for the most part.
Yeah, and he was kind of mid.
Yeah.
He was kind of mid.
And so you look at all these guys that are supposed to be the next generation of managers that have paid their dues, that have done things like Joe Espada has done with teams like the Yankees and the Astros. But when you finally get to the helm, you look at what happened with the White Sox a year and a half ago. You look at some of these teams where the guys finally get their hands on the reins, and they're shaking so hard and they're squeezing so hard because they've never been there and done it before, that you might have a very talented clubhouse, but you might not get the best out of them because you still don't know who you are.
Yeah, it's going to be a telling year for Joe Espada. 713-780-ESPN. What numbers should stars wear versus non-stars? 713-780-3776. Also, when we come back, what do you need to see from Joe Espada this year? And then how about DeZinzo? Are we sleeping on DeZinzo a little bit? It is the Bees on ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5. Coming to you live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's the Killer Bees
on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
Blankers was what word do I want to use here? Should I be nice or mean? Abigail, I was asking.
You should be nice.
I was asking Abigail Blankers.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, let me step out of your way.
Blankers was asking nicely to Esme to get a new coffee pot because ours broke down the hall.
The whole machine.
Esme got it done in a day.
I saw
there's
that.
A new coffee pot there.
She
what a
really
job
loves
by
you,
Esme.
Then, Joel.
That was impressive.
Huh? So she loves you then.
She does.
That was well done.
Love her. She's fantastic. I didn't expect it. And of course, today I didn't have coffee. I bought one on my way in, but yeah, I saw that. Esme's the best.
What was the note they gave you today?
Oh, you don't want to know.
Yes, I do.
I want to know.
Abigail wants to know, so tell her.
Joel Dash, our fave.
Stop.
And then you know what? And I can't get mad because it was a nice message. She wrote it instead of like a black Sharpie. They had this like light blue one. And I went to grab the cup, and the light blue stuff was all over my hand. I'm like, I don't need that.
But that was clutch by Esme. Well done. And
for sure.
You kind of facilitating that. Well done. Did she spell fave, F-A-V, or F-A-V-E?
F-A-V-E.
Is that proper, Abigail? You're much cooler than us. You're hipper and you're younger. How would you spell fave?
F-A-V-E.
Really? You put an E on the end?
Yeah. I text F-A-V. Like, if I'm talking about favorite.
Yeah.
Fave. F-A-V.
See, I thought F-A-V was the way to go. I'm worried about your barista's education.
I actually warned our baristas that this has come up on the air and that they were going to get scrutinized for their spelling. And
oh, so there it is. You thought that? With this one specifically or a different word?
No, just because you texted me one of the
Oh, you texted
previous,
one the yeah, other. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
You wanted to see, and I keep the empties kind of yeah. Before I throw them out in my car. And so I had sent Jeremy a picture of some of the other ones. Uh-huh. First thing he says is, well, they can't spell.
They misspelled a word, yeah. Yeah. I texted you the other day that I'm a hypocrite. Was so right. But the baristas are to spelling what the Killer Bees are to grammar. 713-780-ESPN. What do people want to see from Espada? I got to see progression from Joe. Staying stagnant isn't an option. He can land on the hot seat otherwise. I would agree. I think if the Astros fall short of 90 wins and they miss the playoffs, I do think Espada will be on the hot seat going into next year.
Again, my big thing was if the team still looks like it has talent, if it still's performing, the guys are still doing what they're supposed to be doing for the most part, and they fall short, there's no doubt because regardless of what we hear about in terms of Jim Crane's window being open and all the players, he's going to expect that regardless of who the players are, that you're going to get the best out of your manager. And if he doesn't feel that way, look, he did the same thing with Click. You win a World Series, but if you're not the guy that communicates with the owner the right way or does things the way he likes it done, he'll move on in a heartbeat.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't even think the player production matters a whole lot. I think it's totally indicative of what the win-loss record is. Another texter, Dusty Strozer gone. This is an Espada and Dana Brown joint now. I agree, but it didn't feel like that last year. Like last year, I know that Espada was sitting in the managerial chair, but it never felt to me like that was his team. I will agree that this year, and maybe not even Dana Brown's team, like Bagwell was still a bit of an influence. Like mm-hmm. I think that the Abreu DFA was kind of a line of demarcation of like the new era of Astro baseball going into the Espada Dana Brown era. I don't think you can have that excuse this year. This
is totally their joint.
I agree.
Yeah, this is like as clean of a slate as you can get as a manager walking into what has been a very successful winning franchise. You think about this from the standpoint of other franchises, especially when they win and they win big. They always say it's the toughest job to take that neck, be the next one to successor. You look at Mayo after taking over for Belichick, but you look at the situation like this. He only had to endure one season, and they actually won. But now that a lot of the distractions, a lot of the sidebars, a lot of the stuff that was frustrating here, that's gone now. Now it's him and Dana, realistically. Both of them have a lot to prove this season.
Yeah, they do. The Abreu, Montero, and Hader signings and trading three prospects for Kikuchi won't be forgotten, and Espada won't be able to escape it. Okay. The Abreu and Montero signings were terrible. Hader, jury out, but I don't love spending the type of money that they spend on a relief pitcher, so I think it's fair to talk about that. Now, in what ways do you think that those signings have hurt the Astros? Is it that it's restricted them from signing other free agents?
People just associate it with, look, how many times do we get people that say, well, you know, when you get rid of these contracts, you got all that money to spend, just like that. And it's like how everything else works too. But I think in most people's minds, they feel like that time frame where it was just Crane, Bagwell looking for a general manager doing what they feel like they could do, that they set them back financially making deals that really hurt them. Short term with Michael Brantley, and then long term with the way Abreu was absolutely a disaster, and Montero was close right behind.
I'm trying to figure out how that hurt the Astros this year, though. Like, they still trade Tucker, in my opinion. I think Bregman's still gone, in my opinion.
But I think that they maybe. I think, in a lot of people's minds, if you don't make those two mistakes, you have more money in free agency to get that bat that I've been desperately seeking for this team still to say that, hey, if you didn't make those two bad moves,
yeah,
you might have a more competitive chance to win a World Series this year because you could get the one or two missing pieces we think that they don't have.
See, I think that's realistic. I don't think it's realistic. Oh, we would have still had Tucker. We would have signed Bregman. I think the realistic thing is you probably have one more free agent. Probably not a huge high-priced free agent, though. But I would agree that that's probably the more realistic scenario. And then the Kikuchi trade depends. Like, you know how I grade trades.
Right.
I grade trades based on the war of that player with the years remaining of their club control. So the Astros part of that's already been fixed, right? Because you say Kikuchi's gone. You say Kikuchi had a 1.3 war in his 10 starts with the Astros. So now, Willie Wagner, Joey Loperfido, and Jake Bloss in their years of club control, which is a lot of years of club control, they would have to beat the 1.3 war that Kikuchi gave the Astros. I would bet that they do, especially that Wagner's war was already a 0.7 last year because he actually hit a little bit. Loperfido didn't do much, but it was a 0.2. Jake Bloss didn't make a Blue Jay debut. He ended up, I think, getting shut down with injury perhaps.
Yeah.
So I do think that that package will outproduce what you say Kikuchi did for the Astros in the couple of months that he was here. But I don't think any of those guys are going to be like, make you think as an Astro fan, oh, he was the one that got away. I think they'll outproduce Kikuchi's war, but I don't think that we're going to sit here and like lament the fact that you lost any of those three guys.
No, because this is when it comes down to, from a fan's perspective, when you're always wanting an owner to spend or you're wanting a team to go for it. Sometimes you see the opportunity and you realize this is one where I might lose in the big picture, but I have to go for it in the short term. And it worked out fantastically if you're an Astros fan. You couldn't have asked it to work out any better, with the only exception being if he would have come back here and given you a deal that he would have stayed. But other than that, he did everything that trade was supposed to do. We look at the Verlander trade, the Greinke trade, some of the other trades. Yeah, maybe one of those guys somewhere down the line or a couple of those guys turn out to be decent players, or maybe sometimes you give up a prospect that turns out to be great. But you're going for it at the time because you don't get that many opportunities, and you can't fault a franchise for doing that.
You think that those three will outproduce Kikuchi's war in the 2 months he was here?
Honestly, I thought that of the three, I thought that Bloss might be the guy long term because there was a lot of talk that he could be a 3-4-5 in a rotation. But maybe, but I don't think so. I know Will Wagner got off to a hot start. Maybe over the course of how long they're going to be in Toronto, maybe yes. But I still am willing to do that deal 9 times out of 10. Yeah, it was a lot to give up. But if you tell me that before I do that, that Kikuchi's going to pitch the way he did when he was here, I can't flaw that.
Never got in a postseason game, though.
But, okay, he didn't get in a postseason game. Was that his choice?
No, it's because he wasn't good enough.
I don't think he – I think he was good enough. I think
he's not better than Fromber or Brown.
Okay, right. But he still could have been used. And I think that that's not something that was in his control. But what was in his control is when he got here, he did everything and more than I think a lot of people thought he could do.
Yeah. I think that the Toronto package will far exceed Yusei Kikuchi's WAR in Houston. I mean, Yusei was at 1.3. Wagner was 0.7 last year. And Lopez Fido was 0.2. So they're already at 0.9. Yeah. So they need a 0.4 WAR to tie them. And like we haven't even talked about the Jake Bloss factor of this, and they have like 5 seasons to do it.
I was going
to
say
they'll shatter it.
Yeah. So for the longevity of how long that you have them under team control, yes, then Toronto wins that. But if Toronto never has a chance to even make the playoffs, and they're scuffling, and the Astros got a much better chance to not only make the playoffs but win the division because of the trade they made, I'm not going to. As much as it shocked me at the time, and I wasn't happy, I'm not going to fault them because of the fact that he turned out to be everything they thought he would be.
Like, I get the short-term gain of it. Like, no, like, and he did help. Like, you can make the case that if it weren't for him, they don't make the playoffs. So I get the short-term angle of it. But I do think it – I don't want to be too dramatic here. I do think it hurts them the next 5 years. Lopez Fido is probably maybe not even a starter, but he's in the mix for one of your five outfield positions. Yeah. Jake Bloss, I'm not sure where Jake Bloss is at health-wise, but then Will Wagner would easily be your starting second baseman.
Yeah, the odds are stacked against you for the long term. There's no doubt about it when you make a move like this. But this goes back to when the Astros were in conversations with the Red Sox about trading Alex Bregman for Chris Sale and or prospects for Chris Sale. And people, you know, go back and forth about, you know, and A.J. Hoffman was big on the fact, you go get your Chris Sale right now. Well, it depends on how strongly you feel about your evaluation on your players, because a lot of times, like the Tigers' initial deal that went, the Daz Cameron and all those guys that went for Verlander, at the time, you believed that at least one of those guys was going to turn out to be a big-time prospect in Major League Baseball or be a guy that's going to have a high WAR. None of them have really done anything. So you don't know what you don't know about prospects where you know what you have in a veteran.
Well, you should know, though. Like, I don't like that answer.
So now Dana, if you believe that Dana, and I think his best attribute is his ability to evaluate talent, I think as much as Click probably knew some of the guys in the deal, I think Dana felt strongly enough about who he was giving up that the organization could survive getting rid of those guys.
Yeah, yeah. The don't know what you don't know when it comes to prospects, that's their job. Like that's,
I agree.
That's what makes the best GMs is that they can identify those guys.
Like, and I agree with you, but that's what I'm saying. You have to know your own talent in your organization.
For sure.
So I feel confident that Dana does that. And so as much as I think I thought they give up too much, we'll see. But we don't know until they all make the major leagues and you know, do what they need to do. Whereas Kikuchi did what he needed to do for you. So that's why I won't be as critical.
Short term it helped. Long term, yes. Jury is out. Just like you can't tell the Tucker trade yet either. Like I can't tell you who won the Kyle Tucker trade until Cam Smith's time with the Astros is done. Like we won't know that until 6 years down the road.
Right.
All right. 713-780-ESPN. Jose Altuve looks like he's going to play left field. Who are the worst defensive left fielders that you remember in your life? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5, ESPN 92.5.
The best in Houston sports talk is ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Now back to the Killer Bees.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Jeremy Branham.
People fell in love with Lopez Fido because he was a small bright spot when we were all complaining as a city, not a terrible trade. I don't think that Lopez Fido is an everyday outfielder. I think Joey Lopez Fido is a backup bench outfielder.
Yeah.
That's not the loss that I'm stressing. The loss that I'm stressing, blessing or stressing, is Willie Wagner. Willie Wagner would be your opening day second baseman, at least as a platoon against righties. Like that to me is one, and then what Jake Bloss amounts to as a starter. But I think the Blue Jays, if you use the WAR to determine the trade, I think the Blue Jays will get a better WAR out of their package than the. Yeah, no doubt, no doubt. Like, he's better to yeah. Yeah, I mean, he would have some defensive struggles there. Dubon's a better defender.
Right.
But he can hit. Will Wagner can hit.
It's just
Willie.
Look, I just thought that, you know, he got really hot in Sugar Land, and it kind of expedited everything. But I just, not that I'm saying that he's a terrible prospect. I'm not sure that this year with Dubon and his defense and everything, and that even that regardless of if he was still here and who else they had, I don't know that Will Wagner, in my mind, would be the starting second base.
You're making it sound like he's a flash in the pan.
I'm not saying that.
You said he got hot in Sugarland.
I just didn't know if he I personally don't think if he'd be ready yet.
In
like
80,
defensively, when you got two ground ball pitchers.
Plate appearances, he had 305. Like, I mean, that's against big league pitching. And yes, it's a small sample. Small sample. But in 86 plate appearances, he had 305. 788 OPS. Couple of dongs. I think his bat is ready. Like, he's always had questions about the defense. Like, that's not debatable. Like, the defense has always been a struggle for him. Like, oh, is he going to play third? No, he can't play on the left side of the infield. Is he capable of being rangy enough to play second? Maybe not. Maybe he's not. Maybe he's a first base DH type. But maybe that saves you $20 million where you don't have to sign Christian Walker. But no, his bat's always been plus.
Yeah, I don't know how many at-bats he would have gotten last year if he was still here.
Probably
the
none.
That they had. So, therefore, I don't know that I would pencil him in and said he'd have been a starting second baseman for the Astros this season.
Would you rather have Will Wagner and Mauricio Dubon at second base this season?
This season, I would rather have. And, again, what do I know about Will Wagner? That he had those at-bats with Toronto last year?
Well, you know his entire professional career.
Right, like, but I don't think with this team that I'd be ready to start him this year. I would rather start Mauricio Dubon.
Will, like, the defense is the wild card here because Wagner's defense might not be good enough to be an everyday second baseman. But offensively, Will Wagner, Mauricio Dubon, it's not close. Will Wagner is a far better offensive player than Mauricio Dubon.
Okay, but I have to see him do that consistently with a bigger sample size on the major league level. And so because of this season and what I don't know about him going into it, I wouldn't have started him.
I think we've hit our impasse, Blakers. Yes. What do you think about DeZinzo as an option in the outfield?
I mean, everybody was talking about as camp started, oh, he's jacked and he's just ready for all of this. And then they start talking about where do you put him? And, you know, you start thinking about, were they moving him around last year and where he could play? And then we look at what the outfield situation might look like. I think we might be sleeping on the fact that, you know, he might get more and more reps as an outfielder to try and figure out if, look, kind of like we were talking about from the last conversation, if his bat translates to the major leagues, if he's hitting, then maybe you can see him get more reps in right field or more reps in the outfield and play right and left and get some platoon duty out there so you get his bat in the lineup because he's athletic and his arm doesn't suck, that it might be something instead of the Gamels and the Jakes and the Chazes and all that maybe he's in the mix.
I'm going to have a new guest on the Astros roster on Monday. I am leaning right now that Zach DeZinzo does not make the opening day roster. And a lot can happen between now and opening day. You could have guys that are awful. They go one for spring training. Like if a Brendan Rodgers, like that wouldn't matter if it's Altuve. Like if Altuve goes 1-for-50 in spring training, it doesn't matter. He's hitting leadoff on opening day, either at left field or at second base. If Brendan Rodgers goes 1-for-50 in spring training, he doesn't make the team. So like a lot can happen between now and opening day. But as it stands right now, Joe Espada has been on record to say that he doesn't want his young players on the big league team if they're not playing every day. I don't see an avenue to DeZinzo playing every day, especially if Altuve's in left. So I think they're going to start him out in Sugarland this year, and I think Brendan Rodgers makes the team instead of him. And I think they like Singleton's left-handed bat.
Yeah, I was going to say, and you know, listening to Espada last night, it sounds like Joe likes having that lefty bat on the bench in Singleton. And so that's a roster spot in itself. And I think that from the standpoint of, you know, if all that's true, that maybe it's later in the year that you might find a spot for DeZinzo. If he's hitting the baseball all over the place, a lot depends on what Chaz and Jake do and even Gamble. But if you're going to start the season and give them every opportunity to do so, to your point, you're probably right. Maybe DeZinzo is someone that you might be sleeping on for now because he might not factor into later in the season. But if he's hitting the baseball well in AAA, you need to find, and you know that Jake is struggling or Chaz is struggling and you need help in the outfield, that he has been taking some reps in the outfield as well, too, to where maybe there's a chance.
Yeah, I think he has I think we'll see him this year. My bet right now is he starts the year in Sugarland so he gets everyday at-bats. And maybe he can be one of those guys like Hill and Melton and Cam Smith that if they crush the ball for the first 3 months of the year and the Astros are struggling offensively, that they look to those guys to give them a lift. 713-780-ESPN. Let's have the conversation. Jose Altuve is going to play left field. So it made me think, who were the worst defensive left fielders that you've ever seen in your life? 713-780-3776. Killer Bees, ESPN 97.5 and ESPN 92.5.
ESPN 97.5.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.